Linda Evans is an anti-imperialist who served 16 years of a 40-year federal prison sentence for actions against the U.S. government. While in prison, she was a founding member of the prisoner organizations Pleasanton AIDS Counseling and Education and the Council Against Racism. She also completed both her BA and MA in Humanities and co-authored The Prison Industrial Complex and the Global Economy. On January 20th, 2001, President Clinton commuted her sentence.
Yeah!
Yeah!
Linda is co-founder of All of Us or None, an organization that works to end discrimination against people with felony convictions.
I'm really glad to be here tonight. Thank you, everybody, for coming and for inviting us and for a wonderful occasion to launch Global Lockdown, Julia's book. I have to tell you that Black History Month has extra special memories for me because I did so many Black History Months in prison. And we did a lot, you know, we did as many different kinds of celebrations as we could think of during the time when there was a Black cultural workshop allowed, which was a prisoner organization. We would have kind of big extravaganzas and plays, and, you know, I always had to be either the slave catcher or John Brown, which I kind of like being John Brown, but that was a little closer to home for me. But I really appreciate Black History Month, and I am glad there's some other white people here to celebrate, because I feel like it's a month for all of us, and that I, in my own education, growing up in Iowa, you know, many years ago, I'm pretty old now, we had no Black history. We had no history of other peoples. We had no indigenous history, no Latino history. And I had to really fight and struggle in my own education to learn anything. So I really appreciate the fact that we're here today to celebrate Black History Month. Julia asked me to say how I came to be in the book. And what I remember is that shortly after I got out of prison, which now is 4 years ago, I was released by President Clinton on his last day in office, which, as you know, was the same day that George Bush was inaugurated. I thought there was really karma attached to me getting out and him being inaugurated as president. So I've tried to do my best to fight against his regime during the time that he's been president, and here we are again. Shortly after I got out, though, I was in the critical resistance office, and I remember coming in and weeping. I was really, it's hard to adjust coming out of prison. I had left all my friends. I had left many of my comrades behind who were political prisoners also. And coming out, I felt like looking around me at the homelessness, at the suffering on the streets, at the real economic degradation of our communities, of what people have to face mostly when they come out of prison. I kind of felt like we hadn't made a difference, and that the time that I had spent in prison, during that time, things had gotten worse. And I think that's true. I don't think it's the fact that we failed. I think it's a long struggle. But I went into prison originally for political actions against the U.S. government, basically trying to overthrow the government. And we didn't succeed in that. Did you notice? But I walked into the critical resistance office, and I broke down crying because Julia was there being her compassionate, generous self. And in the middle of this onslaught of tears, she says, "Linda, would you write an article for my book?" And of course I said yes. No, you know, I would do anything Julia asked me to do. And that's how I ended up writing this essay called Playing Global Cop. I don't think today I might use the word playing. I think that's perhaps a mistitle. But it's, you know, already published, so we can't change it now. Do people know what anti-imperialist means? You know, it's a word that I think has great meaning today, but not everybody understands it. So I kind of avoid that language without explaining it, because I think what the United States is doing today is building empire. And it's just as clear today as it was during the war in Vietnam or the whole history of the U.S. government. And, you know, there are so many incidents upon incidents upon incidents, but I feel that if we look at that as incidents, we miss the continuum that started when Native people were thrown off their land and killed in genocidal attacks and continued through slavery, bringing black people here from Africa, and the war on Mexico. You know, you could name them all. It's one system. And by calling myself an anti-imperialist, what I am trying to say is that we need to look at that history as a continuum and not just as opposing the war in Iraq or opposing the war in Vietnam or even opposing racism here, because there is a war on people of color here in this country, as we know. So I hope that we can begin to put the content back in what it means to be an anti-imperialist and what it means to build anti-imperialist resistance without it being rhetoric. You know, there is real political meaning to empire, and it's really, really scary because I think that it's more important now than ever that we develop a real analysis about what's going on that can push us through resisting the war in Iraq or Afghanistan or Colombia or the Philippines to developing an analysis that will allow us to build a revolutionary resistance to this government. And while I was in prison, I finished my bachelor's degree, which I had dropped out of school in early when I was your age, and became an activist fighting against the war in Vietnam and developing that anti-imperialism that has really sustained me through my life. A lot of it was because of the Black Studies, the movement for Black Studies. And that was the first place that I really became an activist, was sitting down in an all-night sit-in at the administration building of Michigan State University, demanding black professors and a black studies department and open admissions, which now people don't even know what open admissions is. Does anybody in here know what it is? Open admissions? The old people. Open admissions in Michigan, at Michigan State at that time, meant that anybody who passed out of high school got to go into college. It was a state university. Everybody had the right to a college education. And now, of course, we know that tuition is so high at our state institutions that very few people can afford to go. There is no more affirmative action. So black people, indigenous people, Latino people are being shut out of the state universities. And open admissions is something that has disappeared. But that was one of the things that motivated me to begin to develop a political consciousness, was the struggle of black students at Michigan State. And I moved from that to a field trip to Detroit, where I walked on broken glass in the inner city around Wayne State, and struggled with exactly what your president was talking about. How does the academy or college relate to the real world? And at that point, there was a growing student movement. And I decided, well, I can't relate to the ivory tower. I'm going to join the School of Life, so I dropped out and eventually did finish my college education while I was in prison. And like Margot said, I did finish also my master's degree while I was inside, basically because I was driven to understand what imperialism had developed into and how it had changed during that 16 years that I was locked up. And what I began to understand was about globalization and how the United States has manipulated and changed the ways, the multitude of ways that it dominates the world. So that's part of what I wrote about in my essay. And I'll just read a tiny bit of it because you guys can read for yourselves. Since the onset of the economic restructuring that we now know as globalization, communities of color in the United States have experienced increasing repression. The Nixon years introduced the war on crime, outlined in Nixon's 1973 State of the Union address. Please note there are footnotes, which was a struggle. Reagan dramatically increased spending on policing and prisons through the intensification of the war on drugs. Both the war on crime and the war on drugs scapegoated and targeted poor communities of color. In many ways, these wars were preemptive strikes. As economic conditions deteriorate, the strategy for social control is to put poor people away before they pose a serious threat to social order. The goal is to incarcerate and immobilize people oppressed by these social conditions, those at the bottom, the helpless, the hopeless, before they organize to demand change. Communities of color that are already ravaged by drug addiction, poverty, and related violence have been further decimated by the war on drugs and mass imprisonment. So when I got out of prison after 16 years, I, along with Stormy and George and others, co-founded an organization called All of Us or None. Basically, what we're fighting for is to build a movement of people who have been in prison, whose families have been in prison, who have gone through the criminal justice system, had felony convictions, maybe didn't go to prison, but have been ravaged by mass imprisonment. Because we recognize that it's not just the individuals. It's not just Stormy as an individual woman or me as an individual woman or George as a young person who went to prison. It's our whole communities that are affected by the prison industrial complex and by the millions of people. Almost 6 million people now are under the jurisdiction of the criminal justice system in this country. 10 million children have parents who have been in prison. What does that do? What kind of scars does that leave on families, on communities? That's what we have to fight back against, and that's the movement that we're trying to build with All of Us or None. I brought some literature here. It's on that table back there. This is a brochure. This is a briefing packet. You know, we're trying to make changes in public policy. And it's hard for me to swallow, to tell you the truth, because I never thought that I would be involved in reforming the system. But it's a matter of survival. It's really a matter of survival at this point. The demands that we're making as All of Us or None are six. Number one, that all the cities and counties in the Bay Area and hopefully eventually statewide prohibit all forms of discrimination against people that are based on our past criminal histories. That means ban that box from the employment applications, from the housing applications, from the student aid applications, and the welfare applications. There are so many types of discrimination that people face once they've gone to prison, once they've had any kind of contact with the criminal justice system. You go to county jail for a night, you're going to lose your job. You're going to possibly lose your house. Your whole family might get evicted if you get convicted of a drug felony. You know, it goes on and on. And I talk about that in the essay also. Our second demand is to end the welfare ban. In California, as well as 20 other states in the United States, if you are convicted of a drug felony, you never again can get temporary aid to needy families, which is CalWORKs here. Never again. If you have a drug felony that is not simple possession, you can't get food stamps. What does that mean for women getting out of prison? How do you have any kind of resources to reunite your families, feed your children? So we want California to opt out of the federally imposed welfare ban. Our third demand, shut down CYA. And we've made really good strides toward doing that. You know, there have been some victories. There was a court settlement that said that the California Youth Authority must be changed so that it now will be regional. Kids will be closer to their families. It's still not good enough. We want to shut it down. My niece, you know, I'm white, middle class. My niece was in CYA for almost 4 years now. And while she was inside, she was molested sexually by the guards, 6 guards. And she's bringing a lawsuit along with some of the other girls in CYA that suffered the same kind of abuse, but it's rampant. I mean, probably some of you saw the beatings, you know, of the young men that were on TV. This is commonplace. We were just lucky that Gloria Romero put that tape out into the public so that people could actually see it. So it's not a struggle that's over. We need to continue to put pressure on them to shut it down and allow the children to be in group homes, in alternative situations where they can stay with family members and have programs so that they actually have something to live for besides violence and abuse. Our fourth demand is that the Bill of Rights for children of incarcerated parents should be adopted. I don't know if it's in here. You know, there's a series of rights that children themselves wrote. And I think it's very, very important that we support the demands of young people who have suffered just as much as their parents from the incarceration of whole families. Our fifth demand is to ban that box on all the applications for public employment. And we're introducing actually a resolution in front of the Human Rights Commission of San Francisco to do exactly that. And we hope to be able to do it here in the East Bay, in San Mateo County, and eventually statewide. And our sixth demand is to increase reentry services that are community-based. And I want to be clear with everybody. You know, there's a lot of talk, oh, those prisoners, they come out, all they want is, you know, more services. There aren't services. Almost 80% of the people coming out of prison end up homeless. That same percentage ends up unemployed. And it really doesn't require rocket science to understand why the recidivism rate of people going back to prison is 67% in California. They can't get jobs. You can't get a house to live in. What else are you going to do to feed your family or be with your family? What are your choices, you know? So as long as there is discrimination, there will never be enough services because we don't have an equal chance. And that's what we're trying to end in All of Us or None. There are lots and lots of ways that all of you can help, whatever your relationship has been to the criminal justice system. One thing is get rid of Jerry Brown. Do not elect him as Attorney General. You know, he is really pushing hard for a curfew against all people on parole and probation so that people coming out of prison are going to stay in prison, but they'll be locked up in house arrest from 10 at night till 6 in the morning. Well, what if you want to go to a late movie? Or what if you want to go to visit your family or to an AA meeting at midnight, which a lot of people in recovery do. Or maybe you want to go jogging at 5 o'clock in the morning before you go look for work. One of the most important things and one of the most difficult things for me coming out of prison was to learn to make decisions. We visit the jail sometimes and do outreach in the jail, and I swear it puts me right back in that same place of going up to a door and just standing there because I know it's locked. I can't open that door. Of course it's not, but that's a prison thing. You know, you in prison, you never have a key. You never can open a door. And that mentality lasts a long time. It's difficult to make decisions when you come out of prison, even about the maybe simplest things. So to rob people of the ability to make a decision about staying up past 10:30 at night is something that is not going to contribute to reducing crime in Oakland. So we need your support to end the curfew. We need your support to stop discrimination against people. We need to make sure that the universities don't have that box on their applications for entrance, which some of them do. And I think that what that means is that we need to build a movement, you know, a politically powerful movement that links the issue of prisons with the survival of our communities, and especially communities of color, because there is a war on. And I remember very well when I was an agitator against the Ku Klux Klan in Texas and trying to exhort people, you know, just push people with the power of my own passion to take action against the Klan. I used to talk about the war against black people and the war against Indian people. And in Texas, that's who they were going, who the Klan was making war against. And it's still true. Maybe the Klan is parading in suits. Maybe the Klan used to be liberal, like Jerry Brown. But they're alive and well, and white supremacy is alive and well. And it's all of our responsibility, especially the white people, to fight against it. And that's got to be part of the consciousness that we bring to the political movement that we build, wherever we're active. What is the war in Iraq about? Well, yeah, it's white supremacy. There's no doubt of that. It's Christian supremacy. No doubt about it. So I think it's really important for us to analyze what's going on, to be clear about the continuum so we can push our movement ideologically and push it in terms of a strategic approach to changing it and ending this system and building it to be extremely powerful so that we can eventually win, because we need to win. Thank you.